The summer of 1969 was an extraordinary time. The Stonewall riots ignited the modern LGBTQ rights movement. Astronauts landed on the moon, Woodstock shaped the anti-war movement, and for black folks in Harlem, it was the summer of soul. The Harlem Cultural Festival was a 5-week musical event featuring the top black musicians of the time, and was sponsored by the city of New York to quell social unrest surrounding the anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.
Although the festival was jam-packed, Stevie Wonder, Mahalia Jackson, Nina Simone, Gladys Knight and the Pips, and so many other legends, it was mostly forgotten until footage of the event was discovered and released in the new documentary directed by Questlove, Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised. Today, musician Earth St. James, who is highly influenced by Nina Simone and the music of this era, joins us to look at the impact these artists from Summer of Soul have had on music and civil rights.
Listen as we chat with Earth St. James about the wonderful music featured in the documentary and what the world would be like if the footage of the festival was widely seen at the time. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Before we begin, let's listen to a little bit of Earth St. James, a song, Under My Bridge.
Sit and you talk to me under my bridge. I got a new story under my bridge. Baby, I'm still a person under my bridge. But it seems like I'm worthless under my bridge. And nothing new is in the news under my bridge. And I have nowhere to go but under my bridge. I'm so tired of struggling, baby, under my bridge. I'm corrupt and confused under my bridge. And I'm so ready to go from you saying under my little old bridge. Can't cry no more from under my bridge. Cause the hurt and the pain and the shame while under my bridge. And done taking me over while under my bridge. And it's a shame the flood took me down. Now I'm under my bridge. And I have no shoulders, no shoulders. Baby, I sit and wonder sometimes under my bridge. Like what's about to happen under my bridge. Under my bridge. Wap, 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 wap.
Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day.
You sound so good, Fausto. Yeah.
Thank you.
It really does.
It does feel great when you pay me a compliment on my singing because I admire you as a musician.
Well,
and
thank you.
I think you're a phenomenal artist. And I'm so excited today to be talking about Summer of Soul.
Yes, you have to come to a show, Fausto.
Show?
You have to come to a show. You haven't been to a show
yet. I want to. I'm planning on doing that.
What is? I've known you how many years? 10 years?
We're taping this show right now.
Oh, it's
there's been a pandemonium going on for the past year and a half.
What about the 3 years before that? 2 years before that?
Okay, folks.
Yeah,
our guest
that?
Today is musician Earth St. James.
Yes.
A beautiful, soulful musician here in Chicago.
Yes.
Who is moved and inspired by a lot of the music from the late 60s and early 70s.
Yes.
Like we all are. It's really the music that of our youth, you know, like when we were children. I mean, you were born in the 1980s, but for me, I was born in 1972. I was a child of Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And growing up in Puerto Rico, a lot of this music was just part of the background, right? When we think about artists like the Fifth Dimension, the Staple Singers, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Mahalia Jackson, even Stevie Wonder, we think of them as their adult selves.
Right.
And this amazing documentary film that's now on Hulu and in theaters, Summer Soul, directed by Questlove, captures and brings back to life the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival that was produced and funded by the city of New York as a response to the riots that broke out from the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr.
Exactly.
And it is a jaw-dropping collection of legends on stage in their youth just busting at the seams to share their love, their music with the world. It's such a beautiful testament to the power of music to bring about social change, to unite people, to heal, and to bring love into the world. But also, it's phenomenal that this was just sitting in a basement for
50 years.
Mm-hmm.
50 years.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, somebody did pull it out like around 2007, they say, and they tried to do something with it, but just nobody was had any interest in it until Questlove became aware of it. And then he's just like, we're going to do something with
this. Exactly.
Well, mm-hmm. there was a guy, Joe Lauro, who is a archivist, and he found out about Samuel Maisha's Tilley. He's the person who put together and recorded all this stuff. And it was just sitting in his basement. He tracked down Hal Tolchin after a screening of the syndication print. Because we've seen a lot of Nina Simone's performance in different, like her footage has been passed around.
And you know, and with that, there was a song that she had, it's called Ain't Got No, I've Got Life. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I never knew that it was from this festival, but that's one of my favorite songs. It's one of my favorite performances by her. So when I actually saw the footage from the show, I'm like, oh, so that's what it is. You know, so I wish I would have known earlier that that's what it was.
And these are all like Gladys Knight and the Pips. One of her first hit songs was I Heard It Through the Grapevine, who has a wonderful, you know, drum introduction there. And they're just like, oh, we like to sing this new song that we have here. You know, and you're just like, oh, my God, that song is so legendary.
Exactly.
And then it's one legendary song after another in this concert. And then, the documentary starts off with young Stevie Wonder coming into his own as a man.
Yeah.
As an outspoken advocate of civil rights. At a time when Marvin Gaye was not allowed to talk about civil rights because his record label wouldn't allow him to.
You know.
Are you familiar with that whole story? Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder?
Yeah, I know. I remember hearing about how Motown and how Berry Gordy did not want Marvin to release What's Going On. He said, we're not in the business of being political. Like, we're in the business of making records, selling mm-hmm. records, making hits. We are not here to be political, you know. But I also think that Marvin Gaye kind of opened that door for Stevie Wonder to be able to be as political and as socially conscious as he was or as he is. But I think that Marvin Gaye had to kind of go through that fire in order to open the door for all these other artists to be able to be in that time frame. And then late 60s, early 70s to be political in that music.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that, like, Gladys Knight and the Pips, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, that was her original song, and Marvin Gaye's version is a cover of that.
Mm.
Everybody thinks it's the other way around, mm-hmm. you know?
Because he made it so popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's the number one.
Yeah.
So when you search Marvin Gaye on Apple Music, his song pops up, and then What's Going On is very popular after that.
But that performance that you see in the documentary is just so phenomenal because it's her singing with those guys, and their choreography is intense.
Oh, of course.
Their costumes are great. I mean, the harmonization and everything is just jaw-dropping. You're just like, this is so amazing. I never realized it was that good.
Or I love how they go to the bridge and they kind of break it down, and it's like, you know, this whole, like you said, it's the choreography with it, and, you know, it's a call and response. I loved watching that performance.
Mm. Yeah, Gladys Maria Knight. That's actually her real name.
Well, and she it's great that they were able to talk to her, and I think it was one of the other Pips that was there. And
her brother, Marv.
Was that her brother next to her?
Merle.
And how she just said, like, you know, we grew up in this neighborhood, and everybody was a musician, it seemed like, and we all went to the same guy. And
exactly.
He choreographed us, and we were in this basement and doing this stuff, and we had to get it right. And just the guy that they showed whose choreography was pretty hot, I have to say.
You know, that's one thing I kind of envy about the 60s and the 70s, sometimes even the 80s, is just the discipline that artists had when it comes to rehearsing and, you know, getting a solid performance. Me as a musician, as an artist, it's kind of hard when you work with so many professional musicians. It's kind of hard to get a rehearsal in. Mm.
I hear that. That's a common complaint from a lot of people that I know that are in bands. They're like, nobody wants to rehearse. Nobody wants to rehearse.
You know, but then again, it's not, you know, they don't want to, that they just can't, you know, because they have this other rehearsal, this other gig. And it's like, yeah, we want to have those really solid, locked in shows and performances with the choreography and all of this. But it's like, you know.
Well, you know, at the time they say, like John Waters says, and Divine had said, like during that period, a lot of people were able to survive as artists by, you know, getting on government benefits and doing this kind of thing. And the cost of living was so much cheaper exactly. back then. You could have a part-time job and, you know, be able to afford some kind of rent or live with people and make your way. Nowadays, there's so many distractions for our time. You know, there's television, there's all these streaming services, there's all this social media that people feel like they have to do on. So that idea to concentrate on just one thing for like 5-6 hours, exactly. 8-10 hours exactly. a day, it's just, you know, we're just not used to that, I don't think, anymore.
But I think that we can see that. I hope that we can get to a point where as musicians and as artists, we can see the bigger picture, you know, outside of, you know, just taking up 5 hours of your time. That's the thing about the big picture. Like, where can this take us to, you know, once we actually have a solid show and move forward? You know, like, this can open up doors for something else. You know, so I always tell my musicians in my band, hey, we can't think about right now. Let's think about the bigger picture of why we're rehearsing and why we want to be locked in and be tight.
Glass Knight was one of the first artists to record songs and, you know, raise awareness for AIDS in the early 80s. She teamed up with Stevie Wonder, Dionne Warwick, and Elton John to record That's What Friends Are For.
Was that a benefit for AIDS?
Yeah, it was a benefit for AIDS.
I don't think at the time I was even aware
know
of that.
I didn't even know that.
For good times and bad times.
That we song was that, everywhere though. All over the radio for a good year.
Well, we sang it. Everybody who went to high school at that time sang it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a monster hit.
Yeah.
Do you remember that song?
I do remember that song.
Did you ever sing it in school? Or
so that wasn't our thing. By the time I got to school, it was I Believe I Can Fly.
I believe I can fly.
that was our go-to.
Gladys Knight was discovered or signed early on with her cousins, William and Edward, and her brother, Bubba, who are the Pips.
Who's that, Bubba?
Bubba. Bubba Knight. Bubba Knight and Gladys Knight.
Yes.
So they were signed by Motown Records and started opening for Diana Ross. And Diana Ross, there were... having such a reaction from the audience that Diana Ross screamed at Berry Gordy and said, get her off this.
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she Frosty tried to sabotage. Frosty tried to sabotage Gladys Knight's,
calls her Frosty.
Gladys Knight's career and tried to get her basically off-signed because she was doing so well at her concert.
Let me say, Miss Ross, the
Miss
boss?
Ross, the boss Ross.
She cannot be outdone. She will not be outdone. She can't. She can't.
Thankfully, history had other plans. I guess there's a connection between, I heard it through the grapevine, the songwriter and the movie Car Wash, Mark?
Oh, one of the guys who wrote Car Wash, the song Car Wash also wrote, like, he co-wrote it, and he wrote I Heard It Through the Grapevine. But Car Wash, the movie, was written by Joel Schumacher, who also, you know, did the Batman and Robin with the nipple suit.
The gay one, yeah.
The gay one,
the gay
yeah.
one. Oh. Joel Schumacher wrote Car Wash. And I guess, what is it? Antonio Fargas, who was a comedian at the time, played a gender non-binary character named Lindy, whose legendary quote is, honey, I'm more man than you'll ever be and more woman than you'll ever get. And then in Rent the Musical, Angel paraphrases
and
that
I've
line.
Heard so many yeah. queens through the years actually say that to
verbatim.
Straight man.
Verbatim.
Like, as yeah. a way, don't fuck with me. And you're nothing.
It's just a really beautiful to see Gladys Knight, just a young woman with hope and enthusiasm. Yeah. You know, there's a sense of hope in this documentary that I feel like, you know, in 2021, with the Black Lives Matter movement and this pandemic, it's kind of healing to see, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. I haven't seen a documentary like that since Dave Chappelle's Block Party. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that, but that came out in 2006, and that was a documentary, like a music documentary type of film thing, where they had, it was Erykah Badu and Jill Scott and Mos Def and Common and Bilal and like all these other amazing soul artists. And I feel like that was the first time that me as a young soul artist, I got a chance to see my idols on the big screen. It was in the movie theaters. I remember I went to the movies to see that. So that was my first time ever seeing like my idols of soul music and of conscious rap on the big screen, you know, in this type of festival type of situation. And I remember how that made me feel back then when I was, what, 15, 16 back then. So to be 32 and to see, you know, this from 69 and, you know, 20 years before I was born, it was just like, wow, you know.
Well, what's great too about watching, you know, Gladys Knight talk about it too, like you get the impression that when she's watching, because you're kind of like watching her watch it, is I feel like it's presented as though it's the first time she's seeing
right.
50 years.
And it probably is. Mm-hmm. It probably is. I think for all the artists, for Fifth Dimension, the two members that represented Fifth Dimension, like how... Marilyn McCoo. Marilyn McCoo,
host of Solid Gold.
how she reacted to seeing herself and how she was, you know, choked up and in tears. You know, I feel like, you know, for all the artists that were, you know, still alive and still present and able to do the interview, that was our first time ever seeing that footage.
Yeah,
and it was really, you know, striking to for Marilyn too, you know, seeing that footage and then talking about it and what it really meant to her to be on that stage at that time.
Exactly.
She really felt like it was a way for her to express her blackness, and she felt like people just weren't getting that.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like,
they think we're white.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, if you listen to the Fifth Dimension, their hit songs are Up, Up and Away in my beautiful balloon. Yeah.
And then Let the Sunshine.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
1969
yeah.
is an extraordinary year in American cultural history. And that weekend, astronauts landed on the moon. The Stonewall riots happened on a Saturday?
Woodstock.
Saturday, the day before the
festival.
The festival started, because the festival spanned several weeks, right?
So Stonewall riots, the Harlem Festival.
Woodstock,
and people landing on the moon. It's like, I imagine that the powers that be are like, shit's going down.
Yeah.
This is a crossroads for history, for civil rights, for people. And, you know, the mayor of New York funded this.
Yeah, Mayor John Lindsay.
He was a Republican.
Yes.
He was, believe it or not, a liberal Republican.
Yeah.
Who then became a Democrat after Nixon, you know, mm-hmm. was like kind of destroyed the Republican Party, or at least, you know, scared off anybody who was like pro-civil rights.
Well, when you first heard like the Fifth Dimension, did you think that they were like a white band?
I'll be honest with you. I knew the Let the Sunshine. I knew that song just by in passing. I never knew who it was. My first time even knowing about Fifth Dimension was watching this documentary.
When the moon is in the seventh.
And it's, you know, I wondered how they came to record that song too. And it's a very interesting, the history behind
it's
from Hair.
Yeah, from Hair.
And they just heard that song and they're like, we have to record this, please.
You know,
let's record
it. So if you guys have seen the movie or have not, or the documentary, basically, one of the singers left their wallet in the cab, and the producer of Hair got in the cab and found the guy's wallet from Fifth Dimension. And called him and said, hey, I found your wallet. You know, can we meet up? So, you know, the guy from Fifth Dimension was like, well, hey, come to our show. You know, thank you for helping us out. I'll pay you. He was like, no, you know, just come to the show. And then he was like, you know, the guy from Hair said, well, come to my show. And he's like, what's your show? He was like, it's Hair.
And he had been dying to go see it.
And yeah.
He didn't know anything about it, but the lines to get in were long.
Exactly.
Because it was one of those first musicals to have all nude casts.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, I guess the beginning of the musical, when they're singing like the Age of Aquarius.
Yeah, they're nude.
There are scenes in there. I don't think they're nude in that moment, but the musical begins with a guy walking naked through the audience.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm just like, you know, I've seen productions of Hair and they're, you know, in colleges, so people are wearing clothes. But I would love to see it.
I've
like
seen
today.
A nude version. I mean, they're not nude the whole show. They're just nude in like one scene.
Yeah. Like in its entirety, yeah. Mm.
What is Pan-Africanism? So, like, this is a term that gets tossed around a lot. You're actually wearing the Pan-African flag as a pin on your shirt.
It's green, black, and red.
Correct.
Green is the color for...
Well, so...
Let me turn it around. Crass,
so,
the smoke.
So basically, we do it's red, black, and green. So
with, oh, it's upside. It was upside.
Yeah, it was upside. So with the colors, the red represents, well, Pan-Africanism basically is the struggle or the plight of black people in America, not from Africa, but just being African American. It was discovered by Marcus Garvey.
It was coined by
coined by Marcus Garvey. I think like 1920s or the 30s for that. But basically, what the colors represent is the red represents the blood that the African Americans shed either through slavery, either through the Civil War, or you know Jim Crow. You know, just the blood that we shed for whatever it was.
Police violence.
It's just the blood. So that's the red represents. The black represents just us as being black people, just being black, being who we are culturally. And then the green represents the land that we built
and growth for the future.
But the land that we built, that we plowed, that we filled, the cotton that we picked,
the contribution
to America. So that's what the green stands for. So the red, black, and green.
So, you know, in terms of the history of civil rights in the United States, there's been different schools of thoughts: assimilation versus developing their own national identity.
Yeah.
W.E.B. Du Bois versus Booker T. Washington's mm-hmm. school of thoughts. Or Malcolm X versus, or not versus, but in contrast to Martin Luther King Jr.
Right.
And so Pan-Africanism is the idea that people who share an African descent have more in common than not.
Correct.
Because of their shared experiences. And it's that, you know, it's coming together to celebrate and to change the world for the better.
Correct. You know, I feel like every other continent, every other, you know, kind of race has their flag, you know, and I think that this I consider, even though it's Pan-Africanism, I consider this the Black American flag or the Black American experience. You know, of course we have flags from Africa and Nigeria and things like that, but I'll be honest, like even though like that's my background where I come from, but I don't know anything about that culture. I don't know anything about that African culture or the Nigerian culture or the Ethiopian culture or anything like that.
Well, you saw Lion King on Broadway, didn't you?
You know, but yeah, but see, but I was right. Born and raised here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So my experience is just being a black man, you know, and not say I'm not African or anything like that, but just being a black man. And that's the reason why I as you can see, I love these colors. I have it on my Apple Watch.
You're like a gay guy in the 1980s who wore like a rainbow necklace and rainbow bracelet.
everything, yeah.
But you have the Pan-African colors because it's like, in 2021, it's an important idea to remember and to recognize and to identify behind.
Identify, you know, and
yeah.
Even at my job, I typically wear this pin or my watch band, you know, where I work, you know, it's not many of us. It's not many, you know, blacks that come in and out through that store, you know, and I just feel like that's my way of just, you know, kind of just representing who I am as a person, not putting down anybody else, but like, I have pride in, you know.
What do you say to somebody who's like, what does that flag mean? And you're like, oh, brother.
I mean, I don't mind.
You're comfortable in explaining that to somebody who's generally very ignorant or willfully ignorant about it.
But I appreciate you asking.
That's good.
As well, sure. Too. I do appreciate, you know, you asking.
What is it? Mr. Rogers says the first act of love, unconditional love, is to listen.
It's to listen, to understand. And the same thing I would do. You know, I would say, hey, like, I'm not familiar with that flag or with that symbol, with that sign. What does that represent? You know, and I think it's all about just growing and understanding and having knowledge about, you know, who you're interacting with. Mm-hmm. You know, and like, and my type of work, it allows me to interact with a lot of people. You know, so I don't mind, you know, explaining what this is.
Is that the flag that they use in a lot of Jamaican art, or do they use the African one with the yellow stripe?
So Jamaican one is the one with, I think it's red, It's red, green, and yellow. Mm.
It's a green, yellow, and black.
Sorry, green, yellow, and black. Yeah. Green, yellow, and black. Okay. Yeah,
that's the flag of the African National Congress, I think.
Right? Correct. Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. It's just something about this. It's just and like, even with Jamaicans, you know, like that's still not U.S. That's still not American. But I feel like with the Pan African flag, that really speaks to me as being a Black American and not, you know, somebody from Africa, somebody from Jamaica, somebody from England. You know, I'm a Black American, you know, so, you know.
Mahalia Jackson, rest her soul. I mean, legend in this documentary. We see her sort of like passing on the torch to a very young Mavis Staples.
Yeah.
And singing a tribute to Martin Luther King Jr.
That, I think for me, that was the highlight of the movie to me. To like you said, Mavis Staples at that time, she wasn't Mavis Staples. She was still a part of the Staples Singers with Pop Staples and
the old Happy Day song.
You know what I mean? No.
What was the Staples?
I'll take you there.
I'll take you there. Yeah.
So people are like, who's the Staples Singers? Because in this documentary, they hadn't recorded those songs yet. And everybody now knows, I know a place.
Exactly. Chicago's very own. Actually, Chicago's very own.
Respect Yourself, the song that inspired Madonna's Express Yourself.
Exactly.
And then Madonna had the chutzpah to say that Lady Gaga stole her song. Look in the mirror, Madonna. Look in the mirror.
It will crack.
Staples Singers are still waiting for that check for
Respect still Yourself. Waiting. Mavis still is still waiting.
Yeah.
But to see, like you said, a young Mavis and how she talked about Mahalia Jackson is my idol. She's my idol. And for her to say, hey, baby, I'm not feeling good right now. I'm not in best health. Go ahead and sing this song for me. Like, I will be overwhelmed the fact that my idol, and if I did a show with Erykah Badu or with India Ario or any of my idols, and they told me, hey, take the lead on this for me. You know,
there would be
such an honor because
melt inside.
I grew up on these artists. You know what I'm saying? And the fact that I'm now being recognized by them and they trust me enough to, I guess, hold this torch and kind of, you know, keep this torch going. I think that was so surreal to see. It was so inspiring to see. That was a highlight for me.
We see photos of Mahalia. There's not a lot of full color, rich, detailed footage of Mahalia Jackson.
Right.
You know, she's a legend.
Right.
It's like, you know, imagine if we saw like a moving color video of Abraham Lincoln, you know, like, and here she is. She's alive. She's sweating. She's singing and she's dazzling the world, you know, and I imagine that standing next to somebody that iconic and that enormous in the legacy of Black music, you know, young Mavis Staples is like, oh my, she is holding it.
Exactly.
Her knees are trembling,
but she delivered.
I was about to say she
held her own. She gave you what was needed. She made it her own. She didn't try to sound like, Mahalia Jackson or any other, Edwin Hawkins. She didn't try to sound like any other gospel, you know, act. She sounded like her and she made it her own, you know, and that's one thing that I really loved about the performance. Like, I got chills actually listening to her to sing that.
Edwin Hawkins and the Edwin Hawkins Singers, Oh Happy Day, is, you know, thanks to Sister Act and Whoopi Goldberg and many other movies.
Yep.
Tyler Perry, you know, it's like in a ton of films.
Well, for my age group,
yeah,
born in 89, my first introduction to that was Sister Act 2.
Yeah.
You know.
La 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 la.
Exactly.
La, la.
Exactly. Exactly. La, la, la. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, when Mark was in Norway and was coming back, I was like playing that song on repeat.
Aww. Yeah.
Because I was missing you terribly. And, you know, it's a song that really sort of captures like a sense of hope and joy, you know, unbridled joy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and seeing them again, just, you know, bursting at the seams, just on that stage, here's a new song we'd like to sing for you. And you're like, oh my God, it's that song.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were saying that he kind of gives you a little bit gay vibes, Edwin Hawking. Not Stephen Hawking. See, that's the physicist.
Happy day.
Well, you know, like you know, you know, in the 70s or in the like late 60s, yeah. you know, how he acts or how he acted back then. If it was today, we might be like,
what is it?
I looked at his Wikipedia.
George Washington Carver.
There was no personal information on his personal life in his Wikipedia. Yeah. So you imagine, like, no spouse mentioned. But, you know, having talked to enough black people over the years, they say if you want to find the black person in church, they're the one who's leading the choir.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, you know? And, like, you know, and I'm not trying to stereotype anybody because, I mean, you can be very straight and have a high-pitched voice or talk, you know, with a lisp or, you know, I mean, you know, so I'm not saying that, you know, if that's what you do, they're automatically gay. But, you know, it's just, you know,
I mean, sometimes you know. Listen to George Washington Carver's voice, you know, the scientist. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's how Mark and I discovered he was gay. We were just, like, stumbling upon this newsreel, and he's like, I am so proud to receive this award. And we're like, what a delicate, transcendent voice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who was this man?
Yeah.
And then we start digging all this up, and it's like, you know, here is a gay icon who lived with his lover at the Tuskegee College, you know, changed the world, contributed so much to black history, to science, to biochemistry, and nobody knows he's gay.
You just taught me something new. This is my first time hearing this.
5 minutes ago.
George Washington Carver was gay?
This is my first time hearing
this. I'm going to blow your mind.
In front of you.
So, you know, he worked with the Peanut, right? Mm. And one of the things he loved to do was give the athletes at the university a hot peanut oil massage.
Mm. It sounds like it sounds like a joke,
but it's for real. And I'm like, that actually sounds good, a hot peanut oil.
Hot peanut oil.
Young man, may I interest you in the therapeutic benefits of a hot peanut oil massage?
I say this with the deepest respect. He is one of my favorite people of all time. And, you know, and that's part of it is like, you know, so much of black history is hiding in plain sight or it's sitting in the basement of somebody's, you know, dusty bins waiting to be unearthed.
Well, because people tried to shop this around initially, right? It was filmed for television, but it never air on television.
Yeah, I mean,
people are like, they say that Woodstock kind of took the steam out of everything, right?
Exactly.
Like, we're more interested in that kind of stuff. But, you know, the U.S. does have a history of kind of like pushing down that kind of music, pushing down Motown, the Beatles and the British Invasion. A lot of that was a reaction to this music that was coming out of Motown. They're like, how do we kind of take this, but, you know, take it from them? Control the narrative. And so that's why you have, like, you know, groups like the Rolling Stones making, you know, $1 billion, basically, you know, stealing other people's acts.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, sort of the documentary also highlights and draws attention to the intersectionality of how New Yorican, you know, Latinx and black artists came together to fight oppression. And like a lot of the people that don't even know this, you didn't know this about when we started taping, that the Puerto Rican flag was a symbol of civil rights and was banned in the United States and in Puerto Rico from being seen or flown or talked about from 1948 to 1957.
You couldn't even have it in your home.
Mm. And now, honey, you got it. You can't avoid seeing
it. All down Michigan Avenue, all down Lakeshore Drive, this flag.
It's interesting. Like if you think about like how, you know, Russia bans the rainbow flag. The fact that, you know, in the United States and, you know, the Puerto Rican presence in New York, for example, is enormous. So and to have the symbol of our identity being, you know, blacklisted, banned, is extraordinary. And the fact that then, you know, all these civil rights people were flying the Puerto Rican flag as the idea of, you know, pan-Africanism, but it's is this idea that people didn't even have words for it, that together we are so much stronger in fighting oppression. And it was such a different, it was in contrast to this really conservative, racist message that everybody needs to be isolated.
Yeah.
So in the Summer of Love, they had a Latin night. Was that how it worked?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, jazz legend, I always thought Hugh Masekela was from Brazil, but he's from South Africa.
South Africa.
Yeah, and Grazing in the Grass, which is one of the greatest songs ever. and influenced Quincy Jones tremendously. Like the, I mean, his Bossa Nova song that, mm-hmm. you know, is the theme for Austin Powers.
Yep.
You know, yeah. those songs mm-hmm. are like, you know, iconic. It's, you know, you've all heard this song.
Yeah. And I mean, you had Mango, yeah. Santa Maria. You also had Ray Barreto. Mm-hmm. You know, and I just love how I think Ray Barreto said he one thing that stood out to me during that performance. He said, "I got black in me, I got white in me, I got Puerto Rican, I got Indian.
So do I.
I got, you know what I mean?" Like, and he was just like, "And we're all one." You know what I mean? Like to be in front of, you know, 30,000 black people and say, "Hey, you know, I'm one of you, but I'm different, and but we're all different. We all got this, you know, this different things inside of us." So I love the fact that they incorporated that culture into that festival, because I think it is so prevalent. Because back then in Harlem, it was just the blacks and the browns that shared that community and that shared that space. So they were influenced by each other. The blacks were influenced by the browns and vice versa.
It was about money. They were yeah. trying to bring the black folks into their dance halls. Mm-hmm. And so people like, I'm blanking out on people's names right now. The Boogaloo folks, they were trying to bring in songs and sing music about what they thought black people wanted to hear. Mm. So there's a song, beep, beep,
too deep.
And they're like singing about cornbread and ham hocks and collard greens.
Okay.
And, you know, and it's from a very sweet and naive perspective, because they're like, they don't even know what those words mean. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
They might. I mean, they probably ate at those restaurants.
But it is the, like, they're just like throwing a word out there mm-hmm. because, like, so a black person like, I know what that is. I'm going to, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? And same goes the other direction. Like a lot of black artists were bringing in a lot of, you know, Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean sounds into their music
yes.
to try to appeal to the Latinx people in New York City to bring them into their dance halls and, you know, spend their money there.
Well, and that wasn't disco a fusion of salsa and soul?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was even a record label called Sal Soul.
Mm. Yeah.
Which, you know, is best known for the Christmas Jollies, which everybody hears everywhere. You know, the disco medley of Christmas that... Bum, 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 bum,
okay,
bum,
okay,
bum,
okay.
Bum, 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 bum. Back the halls with jowls of Holly. Fa la 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 la. You know what I'm
yeah.
referencing?
Yeah.
And the album cover had a naked Italian woman with a Santa hat on that they released it in Europe. And because they couldn't do it in the United States, they airbrushed a Santa dress on her, but she was naked.
Oh, she was completely wow. naked? I thought it was just showing her butt or something.
Or her butt or something yeah. like that. So they airbrushed it, covered yeah. her tits and her ass. And stuff.
I mean, but one thing I loved about yeah. like just that Cuban fuse is that it wasn't just in soul music. They incorporated that in jazz as well, too. So I think, I mean, it just, honestly, I love a Cuban jazz type of vibe. I think for me, that's the best type of
what makes it vibe. What's the Cuban sound for people that might not be familiar? What does it make it?
It's very Congo driven.
Mm.
You know, very like the Congos and the percussion, you know, really take lead over that. Cowbells
over like a saxophone or anything.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you think about like, you know, the Motown doo-wop kind of, you know, sound and the percussion. And then you look at like a Gladys Knight's I Heard It Through the Grapevine, and the way that song begins with that percussion has, you know, there's a bongo playing in the background. And so the use of the bongo or the congas as instruments in the rhythm section for a lot of black music at that time period. And, you know, and the king of it all is Stevie Wonder, mm-hmm. who kicks off this concert, dazzling people with his, super
playing drums. Like I didn't know he could play drums. Did you see that part where
unbelievable.
Like, he was, like yeah. I knew that he played keys. I knew that he was a super producer, but I didn't know that he played drums. And to see that, you know, I was like, wow.
We are not worthy of having Stevie Wonder walk the earth among us. I mean, the that, you know, and the album Songs in the Key of Life is you know, and even Stevie Wonder is like bringing in, like he's cut. There's one song, I can't remember which one, but he begins it with somebody cussing in Spanish, which, you know, he gets away with because no one speaks Spanish.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Spanish. And, you know, and so for me, it's like, it's also interesting how the Staple Singers were rejected by the Pentecostal church for their commercial success. You know?
So I think that was more of
Edwin Hawkins.
Edwin Hawkins.
Yeah.
That was rejected by the Pentecostal church because, like I said, Oh Happy Day had went number one for 6 weeks, and it was being played not on gospel stations, yeah, but on R&B stations. They were going into R&B clubs and, you know, doing R&B television, you know, singing Oh Happy Day. And the Pentecostals was like, well, we don't do that. We don't fraternize with, as my grandmother would say, the blues or, you know, secular music, you know? So it's just funny how,
because the Pentecostals, do they dance?
They shouted. I mean, that was it. That was just shout, but they wouldn't dance. They wouldn't, you know, like it wasn't. And I grew up in a Pentecostal church.
You did?
I grew up in a Pentecostal church. Oh, eventually, boy. As I got older, they changed it to a non-denomination. So basically, it was like, we're not Pentecostal, we're just...
Did you talk in tongue? Speak in tongue?
My grandmother did. And my grandmother, like, her thing was, she wanted me to speak in tongue. Her prayer, and I remember, it was like, Lord, I just want you to feel... They just call me D, or D, or DD, or DJ. I want you to feel D with the evidence of speaking in tongues. So that was her prayer, that I would speak in tongues, and I would, you know...
What does that even sound like?
I mean, I really can't even describe. Like,
it sounds like gibberish. I went to a church once because I don't know if you're familiar with the TV show Facts of Life.
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you might be too young, but so yes. My friend in high school, you know, my friend was like, "Hey, Mark, let's go see Blair from Facts of Life is going to sing. She's going to perform." And I'm just like,
Lisa Winchell.
Lisa Winchell. I'm okay. Like, "Oh, that's cool. It's got, you know, yeah. We thought she was, you know, we loved that show. She was cute, whatever. I like, let's go see her perform." And I'm like, "Where's she performing?" And she's like, "At a church." And I'm just like, "Oh, what?" She's at a church. Okay. You know, because I grew up Catholic. We went to Catholic school. And so I rode my bike and I met him at this church. We go, and it's crowded. You know, I'm like, yeah. Damn. So we had to like kind of sit on the aisle. And we didn't really, I'm like expecting this, you know, performance to happen. And I'm like, oh no, there was a service first.
Oh yeah.
And then
there
was a service. And what I realized is people got up and spoke in tongue. And so when you get up in front of the church and you speak in tongue, you know, you just stand up, you start speaking in tongue. There has to be somebody else in the church that will translate.
And interpret that in the tongue.
Interpret what they're saying. Yeah. Because if you don't have somebody to interpret it, then it's of the devil.
Yes.
And sometimes, yes. I guess a reverend will tell people, yeah, you need to sit down.
Well, I will say this. as I was growing up, it's changed since then. As I was growing up, it was where people during the service would stand up and they would speak in tongues. And you didn't have to interpret it. Now, if you felt like you wanted to interpret what that person was saying, you're more than welcome to stand up and do that. Yeah. But sometimes people would interpret it or they wouldn't. But it's like a different language. It's like, you know, honestly, it's like, you know, like speaking Latin in a way. Yeah,
it's
you
like
know,
scat.
It's like you have to know how to roll your R's.
It's more like
exactly, and like rolling your tongue, rolling your R's. I've never been able to roll my R's.
I'm just talking about Michael Jackson's siblings' names.
So Lisa did come out and perform. I don't even remember what she said. Yeah. They were like Jesus songs,
religious
songs. And after I left, I'm like, that was really weird.
One of the most powerful, heartbreaking, melancholy moments in the documentary for me is Sly and the Family Stone.
Mm.
Why is performance. That? Because, you know, if you go on YouTube and you see where Sly Stone is at, oh my God, that poor man has had so many struggles. He lives in a trailer right now. He's what? Like, yeah, he is not doing well. And, he, you know, at that time period in 1969,
he was
the
biggest thing.
He was huge.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always wanted to see the trumpeter, Cynthia Robinson, who is a woman in brass. You know, she's the one who sings, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yep.
You know, and seeing her doing that song, sing a simple song, live in front of the cameras and seeing the diversity and how it was kind of shocking for people.
The band was very diverse.
An integrated band with men, women of all colors and backgrounds coming together to make amazing music.
And that was Sly who pushed for that. Yeah. He wanted, he's like, I want women in this band. I want people who are white in this band because I want to see us together.
Yeah.
And to me, I almost feel like, you know, he's been targeted by the forces of evil to suffer for his greatness.
Oh,
you know, it's like, I mean, that
I didn't realize he was doing poorly.
I just think it's a different time frame. Not saying that artists from back then are all poor. I mean, you got people like Stevie Wonder or Quincy Jones or
Quincy Jones does not give a fuck,
you know. But I feel like they also knew how to manage their money or knew how to, you know, plan for the future. But like, you know, when drugs are involved, heavy, you know, sometimes you don't make the best decision. You know,
it's always the most brilliant people have the hardest time overcoming drug addiction.
Yeah.
Or I hate using the word addiction or abuse because it's like, we all have a everybody drinks a cup of coffee in the morning and caffeine is a drug, you know? And part of it is like, if you drink too much coffee, you're going to feel cracked out, you know, and it's going to mess up your day. And, you know, when it comes to drugs and drug use, I think we have this like line of that people, you know, define themselves or across. And I think that makes things harder for people who are struggling to seek help, you know, in terms of Sly Stone. I don't know his life or his story, but I would imagine that, you know, as an extremely influential and important musician in the 20th century, that, you know, facing these kind of challenges was very difficult for him and still is difficult for him to seek help.
Yeah.
You know, there's a saying, it's like, and I hate saying that, like, not asking for help is a sign of weakness, but the strongest thing you can do is asking for help when you need it. And everybody needs help at some time.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
It's like, to me, you know, in terms of Sly Stone, and you look at his songs like Thank You for Letting Me Be Myself Again and Everybody is a Star and Stand. I mean, those are all polemic songs. Those are all songs asking people to come together to fight the system and to speak your truth and be seen and heard and celebrated.
Yeah.
No, we're not talking about tolerance here. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be loved unconditionally.
I think that he is loved. I think that, you know, but then again, we don't know if that's the life he wants to live.
Yeah. Maybe he's happy in that
trailer. You know, like some people have lived this magnificent life and, you know, full of all of this stuff. And, you know, sometimes like when they get to a certain age, they're like, you know, like, I don't need all of that. Like, I'm happy and I'm content just being able to get up every day and move around how I want to move around and do what I want to do. You know, so, you know, we don't know if that's by choice either. But I think that with Sly, he's so respected by especially like a lot of hip hop artists. You know, and I think one person I know, for instance, is Snoop Dogg. Like, Snoop Dogg loves Sly, you know, and I think that if it was to a point where it was like, you know, do or die, somebody will step in and help Sly if he's at that point. But like I said, it could be at the point where he's like, hey, I'm content with what I have. I have my trailer. I'm comfortable in my house or where I am. And, you know, I'm fine.
It's just hard to see, like, you know, and I'm not related to Sly Stone, but I have family members who are similar situations where they're like, you know, to a certain point, their isolation is self-destructive and, you know, and they don't see it that way. They see it as they're valuing their independence. So, you know, that's part of the reason he lives in a trailer because he doesn't want to be tied down to a location, you know? And to me, it's just like, it's also a way of not admitting that you're needing to rely on other people in order to succeed. And it's a very lonely path to take to be an artist like he is. And it's,
I think it's a lonely path to be an artist in general.
So how do you overcome that?
I mean, it's
grinder.
Honestly, no. It's nothing like that. Like, it's, I think that I have to be, on the stage, I have to be, or even at my where I work, I have to be so in the and so open and so just, you know what I mean? But like, honestly, like, I'm an introvert. Like, I really like being by myself. I really like my space.
We all love that.
I like
solo time.
Yeah. You know,
not everybody. Some people.
Some people don't. You know, but me personally, like I've one other thing I do find interesting is that, you know, when I do a show, mm-hmm. I'm on stage and I'm giving you all of this energy. I'm giving you all of this love, and I'm receiving all of the energy from the crowd. But then, like after the show, I drive home in silence. You know, being an artist is very lonely. Seriously, because sometimes people don't understand how you feel after a show, or people don't understand the fact that you just don't want to be bothered. Like it's a very lonely life.
You're drained because you gave it all. And all these people are there, and then you need that kind of time to recoup, right?
But then I think for me, I think about, oh, now I have to go back to reality tomorrow and go back to my 9-to-5. And I think that it's like, damn. You know, I'm on this high for 2 hours and now I'm back to reality, you know, and I think me driving home in silence is like just the reality of it's like, oh, I've just given everything I have. Now it's just like I'm back to normal.
Bring groupies home with you. You're like, all right, whoever wants to come home, get in the car.
And I want to impress this upon you. I want to lay this idea upon you and everybody who's listening. If you find yourself having that difficulty or that challenge of like being on stage, being in your happy place, and then having to go to work, fight and work hard to change that.
Exactly.
To make your work a happy place and to make your on stage work, you know,
right.
Blur the lines between work and play. And, you know, sometimes, cause I used to perform a lot when I was in my 20s, and at the end of the show, like I was spent. And to me, it was almost like a depression hits you.
Exactly.
Like there's a sense of loss.
Exactly.
Because you had expectations or something didn't go well, or, you know, and you're always going to be the most critical person about your performance.
But even when it is a good show, even when like you killed it and you know you killed it, it's still that riding home in silence. It's still that, I guess, evaluating the show and just in your thoughts and in your mind. And that's the loneliest feeling. That drive from the venue home. Now, once I get home, it might be totally different. I might snap out of it. But from the drive from the venue home, that's the loneliest feeling of an artist. To be on stage for hundreds sometimes, then all of a sudden, you're in your sedan or your car by yourself driving home.
Because the vacuum kind of is intense to switch from that explosion to that.
It is
emptiness.
It is.
Is it a bad thing?
No,
it's just you know, because part of it is like when you work out really hard at the gym, you're also going to be spent at the end. You know, so maybe just bring a box of juice.
That's what drugs are for, though.
No, I mean, honestly,
seriously,
I learned this from Jeffrey Nippert, and this is why people turn to drugs, right? It's like, you know, your body sometimes is physically depleted, and sometimes it's just a matter of just like having a little protein and some sugar, you know, some juice at the end of your workout can be all you really, and a good nap, you know. It's like,
you know, yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Typically, I don't drink before my shows or during my shows. Mm. So once I'm off the stage, it's like, okay, let me get a drink. Let me catch up with everybody else. So I think that probably has a, you know, part to play in it, you know, just trying to
hard. There's such a temptation to celebrate. And the early days of before we did this podcast, we were doing a musical variety show at gay bars and music venues here in Chicago. And inevitably all you want to do, cause hey, your audience is your friends and your fans and it's your family, right? Mm-hmm. And I always tell people, like, don't expect your friends or your family to become your fans, but your fans can sometimes be your friends and family.
Yes.
And so you're there with people who share a lot in common, is your passion for the work that you do. And so you want to celebrate with them. And man, it's so tempting to open up that ball of champagne night after night.
Exactly.
You're like, oh my God, what did I do?
Well,
to
even when we first started doing this podcast, we'd have guests over, we'd have a cocktail of the day. And Fausta's mother was like, I'm a little bit worried about you guys drinking every day. We're like
5 days a week we were doing and drinking a cocktail.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, you're right. I need to like put the brakes on that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So we're about to celebrate 3,000 podcasts.
Wow.
16 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we're going to be looking back. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can applaud. Yes.
Yay.
And, you know, we stand on the shoulders of giants like Sly Stone, like Stevie Wonder, like Gladys Knight. And her pips. And these amazing artists in the documentary Summer of Soul. Check it out on Hulu. 3,000 shows. We're going to be looking back at the history of podcasting and the history of the show and how it shaped podcasting and shaped our lives and shaped the world. And so right now we're trying to crowdfund so you guys can see us when we tape the podcast and do Cooking with Drag Queens. We're going to be doing... basically turning Cooking with Drag Queens into a live streaming show, and everybody's welcome, including you.
Yeah. I'll be here.
You're going to come cook with us?
Just let me know.
What do you want to eat? Food-wise.
We have to cook it.
We can have our snacks after.
I'm a pasta guy. I like pasta.
I like pasta as well.
Do you like it?
Do you like it homemade?
Yeah.
Linguine, curly.
I like a noodle. I like a spaghetti or
pasta is so much fun to make.
I love, you know what I mean. I love pasta. That's my go to.
And it's like it's one of those things you can eat with your shirt off on a hot summer day and
cold replenish. Pasta, hot pasta.
Oh, especially cold pasta. Oh,
cold pasta salads with beans in them and celery, honey.
And some onions. Oh,
Orson salad.
So right now on GoFundMe.com/FeastOfFun3000, we are, let's ring the door.
1890, I bet, right?
Let's see right now. $1,815 raised of our three, so over halfway through our $3,000.
What's the goal?
$3,000 for 3,000 shows.
Nice.
And I want to do a shout out to AJ Lopez, Ashley Suski, Alfonso Munoz, and Larry LaFontaine, who have all donated in the last couple of days. Unbelievable.
Thank you so much.
I didn't even know about it. So, I mean, be expecting minds. So,
oh, you're so generous.
I didn't even know about it. But yeah.
You can give me more than just a tip. No, I want you to come and cook with us.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to, seriously.
And the only rule, the only request is that you dress up. And then when you think you're not dressed up enough, go harder, further.
That'll be fun.
Brighter, makeup, blingier,
lipstick,
more makeup, more wigs, more earrings. Hats. Fly.
And maybe something for like Halloween.
Fly and the family stone. We're going to be starting if we raise the money, we're going to be starting at the end of Halloween, and it's streaming live.
Gotcha.
So people get to see it and interact with us while we're cooking. And we start off by making a little cocktail and we make a meal
and we eat.
It's about an hour show because of me streaming live. And
so we'll have cocktails that time.
It'll be at night. So people can follow along at home and cook the same thing. So we're going to put the ingredients before the show.
Gotcha.
And so you can cook along with us and have fun.
I'm with it.
Do you like it? What are you going to wear?
I know I want to do like a really big afro.
Ooh.
Do you have a wig?
Like a really big afro wig and part it. Oh, I'll be dressed. Don't worry.
Because everybody is a star.
Don't worry.
A Sly and Family Stone.
But I do want to say this. I want to thank you guys for bringing this documentary to light and being willing to talk about this and talk about Black issues on this podcast. I really appreciate that. You know, it means a lot to me. Thank you for always having me, you know, and allowing me to speak my truth. And also to, like I said, just talk about the issues that are important to me, you know, and being so open and well-versed and the conversation. So I really, really appreciate
that.
That's
really special. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate that. It means a lot to me. I don't do podcasts. I've done, you know, this you guys' podcast the most, you know what I mean, besides anything else. I've probably done maybe one other podcast. But
I'm sure it was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel so comfortable coming here. I feel like I can really be myself and just, you know, and not have that pressure of trying to be perfect or anything like that. But just thank you for addressing the issues that mean so much to me. It really means a lot to me.
Well, you know, Black music is American music. Yeah. American music is black music. And it's like, and, you know, where would we be? You know, Questlove positions this question in the documentary. What would the world be like had this footage been seen and heard in 1969?
I don't think it would have went over as well as it is now.
But the music stuck around.
Yeah.
The music shaped and influenced
us. That music is timeless.
We're able to talk, you know, our generation, for the most part, you know, some of them aren't, but are free to be you and me. You know, it's like we are talking about racism. We're talking about injustice. We, you know, businesses to this day, they, you know, have a lot of areas to grow, but they're talking about racism and they're trying to address that in their hiring and promotion practices. We're seeing a national conversation with Black Lives Matter unfolding and challenging police violence and systemic racism. We are at the shores of the cosmic universe and fighting that inequality, but we are taking steps into the waters.
Yeah.
And those waters run deep and they're blue and refreshing and beautiful.
Yes.
And together we can overcome anything.
We can.
And I absolutely adore you.
I adore you.
Love having you on the show. And I every time I see you, it is always, you're such a breath of fresh air, a ray of sunshine. And, you know, I know your musicians tend to very, very guarded about their music. But you are an amazing musician. Can we play a little bit at the end of the show to so people can hear what you're sound like?
Of course, yeah. I'll definitely send you something. Of course.
So we're awesome. Gonna play a little bit of Earth St. James.
Well, before we go, I just wanna say, I just wanna shout out Nina Simone. We didn't talk about her and she kinda closed out the documentary. And I think that was once again the highlight outside of Mahalia Jackson. Nina Simone was the highlight for me. She's one of my favorite artists. I'm actually doing a Nina Simone tribute in November.
Yeah.
November the 16th, 13th at Epiphany Center for the Arts. But I'm doing a Nina Simone tribute. So I just wanted to kind of shout her out and just her influence on the culture, especially in 1969 and just what she stood for and the stand she took back then.
Without you know, the Cruella Disney film soundtrack is full of Nina Simone's music.
Yeah.
So, you know, oh, yeah, like young people are like, you know, rediscovering, you know, feeling good. You know, birds flying high, you know how I
feel. Come on, Fowl, sing. Sing.
And, you know, the funny thing about Nina Simone, and because she was wanting to be like a professional musician. She was not into
classical piano.
Pop culture, she felt that beneath her to some degree, correct. You know, and I'm listening, you know, feeling good. And like, I'm thinking about like Christopher Walken, how he's famous for phrasing things kind of unusually. And she's kind of very similar in that way, you know, like she's not on the tempo in the beginning of that song until the band comes
slightly
in.
Behind the beat. Yeah. Or, yeah. Yeah.
And that's requires a lot of skill. You know, she's not accidentally doing that. She's intentionally doing that. On with that phrasing is very requires a deep understanding of music and tempo and structure, and you know, so her being able to sort of manipulate time the way she uses phrasing and create either tension or release in the song, it shows the mastery of her skill.
And I think that's why she's one of my favorite artists, because she was always intentional, and she also said the duty of an artist is to reflect the times. Like, how can you be an artist and not reflect what's going on and not write about what's going on? And ever since I heard that quote, that stuck with me. Me as an artist in the 21st century and 2021 and this Black Lives Matters, this Me Too movement, how can I not reflect the times? How can I not write about my experience as a Black man in 2021 on the 21st century? So for her to say that, that really inspired me to always write honestly and intentionally.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between an artist and an entertainer, right?
Exactly.
An entertainer is just there to entertain. An artist is there to, you know, make you think.
Yeah, you're not a robot mouse at a Chuck E. Cheese pizza parlor.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's entertainment.
Make it timeless.
Earth St. James, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
And people can follow you on social media. Where can you get your music?
Instagram is at Earth St. James. That's E-R-T-H-E. So it's Earth, but you take the A out.
and you add an E at the end for decorations. So ERTHESTJAMES. And that's just everywhere. You can just Google Earth St. James and everything will pop up there.
And we'll put up a link on the show notes. If you're just scroll down on your podcast player, you can subscribe to Feast of Fun. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell the world how much you love Feast of Fun, because those reviews actually help the algorithms, the sciencey stuff, the computer stuff. Helps the podcast be discovered by new people and enjoying the Feast of Fun good niche.
Yes.
The good stuff.
The good.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody who is listening. Go check out Summer of Soul on Hulu. Probably Oscar winner this year. Best documentary film. One of the best documentaries that we've ever seen. Dedicated a whole show to it. Thank you so much, Earth. St. James. See, I did it like Nina Simone.
The one and only. The only one.
You see how I paused?
Earth.
St. James. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you, guys.
There's a hole in the room. Hole in the room, singing with me, y'all.
Hole in the room.
Ooh. Lonesome above this kind of space, and it's easy and it's wholesome when no one's in the way. Well, if no one's in the running for the pot, I would love to pick one day to show you the main room. I don't need no bouquet, I just need proper space. Hold me 3 blocks away, I got bottles for days. I got tropical haze, go ahead and wave back. Let me help with your coat, grab a hand of my arm. Tell them niggas to move, tell your sister you vibe. Cause baby, there's room in here. Just enough for two and from here. Well, ain't nobody but you and me in here. Yeah. So tell me what we gon' do from here and now. So what we gon' do, what we can do, yeah.
You ask what's my occupation. Well, I'm a landlord. I oversee properties. My main source of income is this oversized heart. It used to be packed like bad arteries, but I made some evictions once I saw your commitment. I told them they always had a place to stay, but they was taking up space without paying me for it, and the rent been past due. Until I saw you, I flicked that chip off my shoulder. I flipped this fixer-upper into a lap of luxury for a deserving lover. I Joanna Gaines the past pain. I reimagined the design. I made space for you. I widened the entryway. Took off those antique doors for something more contemporary. And contrary to the canary, the caged bird don't always sing. You gave this old thing some new wings. You turned that apartment complex into the Magnolia compound. And this heart is a home.
Hole in the room. There's a hole in the room. Yeah. Cause baby, there's room in here. Hey, just enough to in here. What we gon' do right here? Come on, and what we gon' do? What we gon' do?
Hole in the room.
La 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 la.
just me and you. So tell me what we gonna do in here. What we gonna do? What we gonna do?